Welcome to The Catholic Arsonist.
She's so short.
Did you actually see her?
Yeah.
Like, she's there?
She's there.
Did you lay next to her and be like, morning?
It's not a... It's like a...
It's like a dead kind of short.
I think, I don't know if that's her real body. I think they...
What?
No, I think her bones are there, but...
Yeah, they had, they like told us there was like a wax, like, face sort of covering on her. That she's not incorrupt, but...
Yeah, I don't think so.
Anyways.
Nice.
Alyssa's back from her hiatus.
I'm back.
She can't quit us.
That's
she
right.
came back.
I came back. Faithful. And I did bring back a new camel to the group. If you're a faithful listener, last week, Father Andrew and Shana joked about the Jerusalem camel that we affectionately named Humphrey. Well, Shana and I did. I don't know. Father's never said his name out loud. But now he has a mate.
just got to be careful about the progeny.
The progeny?
Yeah, potential progeny.
Be
overrun.
That's right. These, for your reference, these are wooden figurines that could fit in your hand.
This is what they sound like.
Nice. They have little like red carpets on their back for authenticity.
For Aladdin.
Oh, no. But I bought this camel before I listened to that podcast, so we are just all on the same page.
So amazing.
We know each other.
We know each other.
Everyone's name?
Humphreyna.
Humphreyna. Nice.
Yeah.
Make it very feminine.
So the goal of this podcast, I think, is to explore what Alyssa explored. All of the things. So it'd be one thing, I think, even I would get bored if you gave me a day-by-day rundown.
Right.
So give us a night. What was your itinerary, generally speaking?
Sure.
Left
St. Louis, flew to Newark. Once we got over, the first stop was Italy. So we did a day in Rome, sojourned to Assisi via bus. So that was like a 3-hour ride maybe. Was at Assisi for 2 nights, came back to Rome for 2 nights, and then flew from Rome to Tel Aviv, which is in Israel. And then from there, there's like an hour to Bethlehem, which is where we stayed in Israel. When we were in sort of like
Judea.
Yeah. We stayed in Bethlehem. And then the little, excursion we took while in the Holy Land, was to the Sea of Galilee. So then we stayed in Tiberias for 2 nights, and then came back. And when we came back to Bethlehem, same hotel, same everything, we were in Judea, we were in Jerusalem, and the surrounding sort of cities for the Triduum and the end of Holy Week. So, yeah, really, really blessed time.
Mrs. Worldwide.
Not so worldwide, but yeah. I do apologize if I sound a little raspy. It's not COVID, I promise, but I am ill. So
when you landed in Rome, did you expect to see palm trees at the airport?
No.
But you saw them, right?
I did. I saw palm trees. And
I remember being surprised by that the first time.
Yeah. I was like, what are you guys doing here? And at St. Paul's outside the wall, that was kind of the first stop we took in Rome. That's one of the 4 major basilicas in Rome. And
like you went there before you went to your hotel?
Yeah. Jeez. We got
hit the ground running.
Literally. And we're like deceased because the time changed. Well, those were there. Everything was on charter bus.
Oh.
Yeah. So, I'd never been a part of a tour like that before, really. Where that's sort of like your home base is this bus for 2 weeks straight, you know? But we went straight there and had mass because it had been a long time and we hadn't had mass. Mm-hmm. Father had celebrated, mass that day. And there were, it was so balmy and, I was so confused because there's palm trees and it's this gorgeous like facade of this church, but then there are Mini Coopers and Fiats everywhere, and they're all parked on medians of roads, and it's like, what are you guys doing? It was just crazy, but that was the first stop was St. Paul's. So how much do you want me to go into more depth, or
what sound did the sirens make in Italy?
What sound did the sirens make?
The ambulance sirens, you know?
It's kind of like wee woo, wee woo, wee woo.
Yeah. Be-le-be-le-doo.
Oh no, I didn't hear that.
Oh, really?
Like an ambulance siren?
Yeah.
Oh no, we didn't hear that.
So all the fun things.
Oh, that is not a question I would have asked.
Well, father lived in Rome, so it's like recalling all the things.
So St. Paul outside the walls.
Mm-hmm.
Who's buried there?
St. Paul's bones.
Yeah.
There's also a chapel, where we celebrated Mass inside that basilica was the Chapel of St. Stephen. So that was like a little, all these major basilicas, it's similar to how we have four different chapels surrounding the main church of the Basilica of St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many different chapels within the same building. And they're all so beautiful. Yeah. So Father Martin had a good sort of lens that he invited everyone to sort of kind of journey through the 2 weeks, and which was like three layers of entering into the 2 weeks. So he said there's going to be the human element, and that's sort of the easiest to enter into. It's like the long lines and the slow walkers and the fact that you can't understand what's being written on these signs and all these things, like the noise and when your stomach hurts because of layovers and or jet lag, I mean, and the human element. And he said there's a theological element, like these things took place here, or like this is the headquarters of the Catholic Church, and we know this because of in scripture, right? Like those are sort of the theological points. But then he said the third element is going to be the one that, like, when you take it back home, reveal the ways you've been transformed here. And that's like, what has Jesus spoken to you through these things? How has he encountered you personally? Yeah, and I think some of the pilgrims, obviously there's a variety of people who show up to these things, but there's just a spectrum of a capacity of being able to enter into that. So it was cool at the end of each night to be able to come back and have dinner and just enter into like sharing graces of the day. And yeah, not just like, oh wow, we were all in that long line outside the bathroom at whatever, but like, how has your heart been moved by being in this place where Jesus walked, you know?
Yeah.
So that was a really cool part of it. Like Donna Kleppel, she's incredible.
Big listener.
Big listen.
Yeah,
big
yeah.
Shout out to Donna. She was a spitfire the entire 2 weeks. She was a ton of fun, but also like even in, she would admit this, she was making jokes about her age the entire time, so she wouldn't be offended by this, but she allowed her heart to be pierced by what she experienced. While there, and it was, I won't share her stories, but yeah, it was just beautiful to witness.
Hmm.
Well, how about you discuss that third element? Anything, I'm just going to jump in and ask.
Okay.
Like, how was your, what were some things that, like, moved your heart, or I put in now?
Maybe? No, that's okay.
Okay.
I was just thinking, I haven't had a whole ton of time to process it myself,
okay.
So it might not be super coherent yet, but and some of it, it's like, I'm not going to share with the listeners what was placed on my heart at the tomb of the Holy Sepulchre, you know, so, but, I might share it with you guys later, but anyways, no, that's a real part of it, and the whole time, I, like, this is the way my brain works. Humphrey, please.
Sorry.
I kind of, like, in order for me to understand information anyways, I start to categorize things, so I was trying to take note of, like, okay, what's happening as we, like, day after day from, like, a macro level. And the line that kind of kept coming up for my own understanding and ability to enter into each day was that it was a pilgrimage to radicality. And that sounds, like, sort of fancy. And I don't mean, like, I think crazy things can happen when people label themselves as radical. I'm not saying that, like, I'm now living radically for the Lord. I don't mean that necessarily, but it just felt like starting with the headquarters of the church and then going to visit the hometown of saints, and like how it's been lived, like how the Catholicism has been lived in a crazy way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then going to the Holy Land and seeing where Jesus did his public ministry and where the gospel was first spread, you know? It's like just a deeper and deeper, more narrowing on what it means to be a disciple, And then finally, like, we, the whole pilgrimage culminated with, like, death on a cross and the resurrection, right? So it's like, mm-hmm. here's the authority of the church and, like, what a gift the Lord has given us. And you know, St. Peter's is, like, unreal. It's like one of those things you just walk into and just like shed a single tear, you know. You're like, what is my life? Yeah, and then following the lives of saints and being like, whoa, this like impacts real people, and then seeing where Jesus walked and then going to the cross with him. It's just like a narrowing focus on becoming rooted in the gospel message. So yeah, there have been, I mean, I have like, there are certain places that touched me more than others.
What struck you about St. Peter's?
Basilica. St. Peter's, yeah. The first day that we had gone there, it was sort of like high emotion anyways, because you're super tired, and then there's this like fiery Italian woman who's like, I'm your tour guide, you know? And she was awesome, Enza. Yeah, but we went to St. Paul's and then like 30-minute tour of St. Peter's, and then we got like 15 minutes, 20 minutes to walk around by ourselves. And I mean, it's crazy, like the Pietà is there. St. John Paul II's tomb is in one of the like the alcove chapel things. St. Peter's bones, you know, crypts underneath. So it's just like there's a lot going on there. But I remember leaving there, well, being there and just thinking like, it's really... Yeah, it's really easy to walk into a place like that and be like, this is so grand and unnecessary. And that's not at all the experience I had. It was like, the experience I had was like, and how much more do I love you kind of thing. Like, this is all for you. Which is such a weird, like, the church is not for me, per se. It's not like Alyssa's Basilica by any means, or not even like a St. Louis Basilica. That's like my home city, but... it was just like, oh, Jesus, like the grandeur that we as humans like want to adorn you with and adorn our worship spaces with. That's, I mean, it's the biggest church in the world. It's like bigger than anything I've seen and more grand than anything I've ever seen. And we do this for you because of what you've done for us. Like, that's what it was. It was like, this is all for me. And it just felt like, you just want to, like, kneel as you have that thought, you know? It's just like, what am I to do with that? So, yeah. We went back again. And the second time, I'm like, wow, she big. It was a little bit less, like spiritual. But,
it's massive.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you, what was it like the first time you went there?
Yeah, similar thoughts. But, yeah, I think one of the shames of St. Peter's is that it's often perceived as a museum more than it is a church.
Every church in Rome was like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the hard thing about, like, you guys are pilgrims, but most people that go there are just tourists.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a difference. And so I think oftentimes St. Peter's is like one of the most hectic places on the face of the planet, because mm-hmm. there's probably 30,000 people who are in there moving around, and it's just like, this is crazy.
Yeah. It was, we were told that the lines weren't too long, like the day that we were there. They said, like, post-COVID, things have been really slow, but May is when it really picks back up, like post-Easter. So it took us like 10 minutes to get through security, which is pretty rare.
Did you get to see St. Catherine, your girl?
No.
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm serious. So
did you get to walk around Rome at all?
Yeah, like, we broke off from the group, Maggie and I. Maggie, we broke off from the group so that we could walk around a little bit, because at a certain point, I don't mean to, this is like, I would never get tired of walking around those churches, but you have a few hours left and you can only look at like so many beautiful paintings from an artist that you have never heard of for so long. Mm-hmm. You know, you like get a little basilica out.
It's a lot.
It is a lot, yeah, to take in. So we ended up going, we like split up from the group while they were at St. Mary Major and St. John Lateran, and we stopped into those for like 20 minutes, and then we wanted to go to the church where St. Catherine of Siena is, because she's my confirmation saint, and she's in Rome, and well, part of her is, yeah. And we get to the church, and it's like 3:40 in the afternoon, and it's locked. it's locked.
Devastating.
Yeah. And I'm like, what the heck is this? Like, what do you mean the church is, like, yeah. So we read this sign on the door that's in Italian. So we're like using Google Translate, like trying to figure something out. And it says, you know, we open for prayer at 4 p.m. So we're like, great, 20 minutes. Go grab a snack, like come back. Mm-hmm. And when we come back, the doors are open, but inside the doors, there's a large sort of metal gate thing that you can only step in, and it says the church is closed for renovations.
No.
So we didn't get to see her. But then we were like, you know, flip the tables, angry. We started walking back towards St. Peter's, and that's when we ran into St. Andrew's Basilica.
Yeah.
And that was like a surprise, like a fun little surprise. Like, we didn't know. We were just walking down Roman streets, you know. Yeah, and that was a beautiful church. Lots going on for Mary in there. There's like a lot of Marian chapels in there. But so,
did you see St. Ignatius?
No, we didn't go to
there's just so much to see. Like, I just can't even describe it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us about Assisi, St. Francis.
Assisi was enchanting.
It really is a beautiful town.
I don't...
Nestled on a hill.
Nestled, that's a good word for it. It's like totally old world. It's not like anything I've ever seen before in the flesh. It's all very, like, sort of narrow streets with, like, one main plaza, and on one end of it is St. Francis's Basilica, on the other end is St. Clair's.
Never the twain shall meet.
What'd you say?
Never the twain shall meet.
What is that?
Never the two shall meet, I guess.
Oh, okay.
But they're always separated.
Yeah. And so the first day that we were there, we got in later and went to, in Perugia, like, lower Assisi area, that's where Delgi Angeli?
Yeah.
Santa Maria Delgi Angeli. This is where the Porziuncola is.
The church that St. Francis was told to rebuild.
It was just wild. In that church, that's like, it was hard to believe. Like, Assisi was sort of up on a hill, and this church was much further down, like lower down. I don't know how to describe it without, like, yeah, without y'all seeing it, but it's a basilica built around this, like, tiny chapel. It's like a snow globe, kind of.
Yeah.
And you can just imagine, like, St. Francis would have, like, been looking out from Assisi and seen this little, like, chapel that's, like, in the middle of nowhere on his way to a warring city, right? Yeah, you get to walk through there, and it's a holy door, so you receive an indulgence if you walk through it and then go to confession a certain time, you know, whatever. I don't know how to describe it other than, like, to be in the place where the Lord has inspired some of the, like, one of the greatest saints that's ever lived. It just, like, really grounds you in the fact that, like, this is so possible. Like, it's not impossible to be a saint. And Francis was radical, and he was crazy, and, you know, like, not all saints manifest like he has. Like, stripping naked between his earthly father and his spiritual father, the bishop, you know. But, yeah, so it was wonderful. And, yeah, so then I think, honestly, like, I love the Basilica of St. Francis. That's where his bones are. St. Clair is obviously in St. Clair's Basilica. And that's also where the San Damiano cross is. It was moved from San Damiano Chapel to her basilica. And then we went to the actual Church of San Damiano, which was the church that was present for Assisi when it was like their parish, essentially, kind of, that St. Clair then later used as a convent for when the order was started. So we did that on the second day. We walked down this hill, and it was far enough removed from Assisi proper, which in and of itself isn't totally like hustle bustle, like it was nothing like Rome. But being on the outskirts of the city and walking down there and seeing the simple chapel, like it wasn't like this is the great thing that we have built for this great saint. It was like, no, this is where she lived and prayed, and this seat where this flower is, this is where she ate, and this corner of the room here under this crucifix, this is where she died. She died on her mattress pad, essentially, that they slept on. And I was so moved by San Damiano. I don't, yeah, and I, again, it's like, this isn't very polished, but it's, and I have to sit with it still, certainly, but just the simplicity with which she was able to live, and again, I don't think it, like, it was radical, and I think it would certainly be radical for the time, but she built a prayer room in the place she lived, like a chapel, and painted the walls, and it was super homemade, but like really intricate and ornate, and yeah, you can just like imagine her lying prostrate there and walking about in the garden, and you look out the window that she would have looked out, and it's like, oh, yeah, this is real. Like, Lord, you pursue people in such a way that they fall in love with you and desire to give themselves to you. And they are not left joyless or, like, yeah, wanting. So, yeah, that was just, Assisi was wild. We did not go to Blessed Carlo Acutis's tomb.
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, I would have preferred all the places you could have gone, Catherine of Siena, but
neither. Just have to go back.
You can either. Bummer.
So.
So, yeah, I think to your point, there's something about the two places, Jerusalem and Rome, that, yeah, Jerusalem or the Holy Land, you get the foundation of the faith. In Rome, you get like where persecutions happened and so much history has taken place, and you're just getting like hit from both sides. But
yeah,
they called the Holy Land, to go visit the Holy Land is like, they call it the fifth gospel.
Yeah.
So like, you learn a lot about Jesus from reading the gospels, but you learn a lot about Jesus about going to see where he lived and what he did.
Mm-hmm.
So how was the fifth gospel?
How was the Holy Land? Well, so the fun thing about this whole process was that we had just come from Assisi, a couple days in Rome, and then we're going to the Holy Land, right? So we're just like being immersed in the life of St. Francis, and then every church in the Holy Land is run by Franciscans.
Totally.
And it's like, what are you guys doing here, you know? And it's because Francis, baller that he was, like traveled to the Holy Land trying to convert the Sultan there, you know? And he was so, the guy in charge, Sultan? I'm not sure.
Sultan.
He was so enamored by the peace with which Francis lives that he said, like, you can have, like, territory and these holy sites, right? And ever since then, it's been run and governed by the Franciscan order.
Yeah, the custodians of the
right.
Holy sites in the Holy Land.
There's only one that's not run by the Franciscans, and I'll tell you about it. But, yeah, so Fifth Gospel, I think that's really, really accurate. And honestly, it was more interesting is probably the wrong like superlative, but it was just increasingly interesting because while we're there, there's so much political strife going on in Israel, between Israel and Palestine, between Muslims and Jews, and then the Christian minority, and some of those overlap and intertwine, and so even that was maybe could be filed under that human element where it's like, okay, we're at a checkpoint because we're leaving Bethlehem, which is a Palestinian under Palestinian control. It's in Palestine, and going the 25-minute drive to Jerusalem. But like, we have to go through this checkpoint because like Palestinians oftentimes try, you're crossing a border essentially, but it's like a very permeable border, you know? But then coming back into Palestine, you're seeing signs that are like, Israelis can be met with death if you come in here unannounced, you know, and it's just like, what? What is this place, you know? So all that is to say, while we were there, Holy Week, Passover is happening for the Jews, so there's a larger influx of Jews there than normal, than, like, you know, just the Israeli Jews. And Ramadan is taking place as well, so especially on Good Friday, there were, like, the number we were told was like 60,000 more Muslims in Old City Jerusalem than normal. And Old City Jerusalem is not large. And particularly like the Muslim quarter isn't too large, and the Temple Mount area. So it was just interesting to like kind of parallel that with, okay, there's tensions rising in the city because more people and more activity going on, but then also like as Jesus would have entered Jerusalem during the final days of his life, tensions would have been rising as well. Like the crowds that he was trying to escape by going up to the Mount of Olives, right? And like coming back down. And so it was just really mirrored with Holy Week. But the fifth got like, I don't know if I can speak to that theologically, like why it would be a gospel, but...
No, I don't mean that, but it's just an experience of the Lord.
Yeah, completely. Like, even reading, like, some Psalms this morning, it's like, oh my gosh, I have seen the things that have inspired these words, you know? And it's like, that just, like, gives you chills to think about and able to meditate. And you can more deeply enter into, like, the mysteries of the Rosary and... like I've never so poignantly mapped out how the passion took place and like where he was held in a cell before trial the next day and all these things, and then being able to on Holy Saturday like sit in the pit that he was held in that would have been completely dark, and it's like under the earth, and as he knows he's going to be like killed the next few days, you know, like it was wild. I would say sort of that third tier, I guess, a moment for me was, it was Holy Friday, or Good Friday, excuse me, and we're praying the Stations of the Cross on Good Friday, like walking the Via Dolorosa, and like I said, Friday is a holy day for Muslims, so there was thousands and thousands of Muslims there, and like I'd never in my life felt like a minority anywhere, really. In Uganda we did, but I, like... not because I was a Christian, just because I was white, which is completely different. Like, I was not really an ideological minority there. It didn't feel like that. But there it did. Like, in Jerusalem, it did. And,
You're hearing the call to prayer every few hours.
Oh, yeah.
The
which
Muslim,
is just
the
eerie.
The call to prayer.
Yeah. It's like eerily beautiful. But, so Good Friday, we're praying the Stations of the Cross. Like, tensions are being heightened in the city. And we're walking between stations 3 and 4 down this like smaller corridor, and we're walking single file because you can't walk in a pack, really. The roads are the streets are smaller, but and off in the distance you hear gunfire, and it was 100% gunfire, and I'm like turning to the person behind me and like, did you hear that? And they're like, yeah, I heard that. And so it's like, well, you keep going. And in between the stations, the woman who is leading us in prayer, Catherine, leading us in song, I should say, we were praying, singing together, like out loud, in the streets of Jerusalem. Were you there when you crucified my Lord? Like very slowly and solemnly, just that line. Mm-hmm. But then also, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And so we hear gunshots, like it's like boom, boom, boom. We hear gunshots. We come up to this like intersection where there's Israeli soldiers on the left with like AK-47s, like just keeping watch, and more Muslims than I have ever seen in my entire life crossing in front of us, like back and forth at this intersection, and we're singing Jesus remember me when you come into my kingdom. And it was the first time in my life where I like stopped singing for just a moment to have this thought, and I was like, is this safe to do? Like, is this okay to be drawing attention to ourselves like this? And like, we're Americans, so of course we draw attention to ourselves. We're taller than everyone. But I mean, like, to actually be singing the name of Jesus and praying out loud in mm-hmm. this situation. And yeah, like, it was a graced moment to be like, no, I don't want to do this because it's comfortable. I want to do this because it's true. So I will keep singing, you know, mm-hmm. and it wasn't like, not everyone was like screaming, mm-hmm. but they were looking at us, and, majority of the other, like people that were there, everyone's about their own business. So a lot of the Muslims that we were passing were just like watching and then like did nothing, you know, like majority mm-hmm. of them didn't say anything, but, so yeah, it was just like, I will follow you here, you know, and stopping at each station where Simon helped him carry the cross, and then the spot where Veronica wipes his face, there's a little mm-hmm. chapel inside this wall that's open one day a year, and it's Good Friday. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so then you end at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, because that's where the final two stations are, is inside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we couldn't actually go inside. Yeah. And yeah, we couldn't actually go inside for those last two stations because it was closed still. So we just prayed them outside and then waited in line to get in. But that's like a Jerusalem moment.
So you finished the Stations of the Cross in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing like the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. It's just like a totally unique experience. Did it smell like rose incense or rose, like, or maybe oil when you came in, like aromatic nard?
Honestly, so we went in there. Oh, it does smell beautifully. It's like dark, but not like gross. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we came there briefly on Sunday afternoon after the Passion Sunday. Palm Sunday procession.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time that we went in there on Sunday afternoon, I don't know what rite was doing this. I think it was Greek Orthodox or Armenian Orthodox.
Ethiopian or
Coptic,
whatever.
One of them, yeah. They were incensing the tomb of Joseph of Arimathea, not his tomb, but like where Jesus was laid after burial,
right as you walk in. Yeah.
And someone said to me, they incense in here every so often because of like all of the paganry that walks through these doors. And I was like, I believe it.
Yeah, big time.
And like, I'm sure people trying to do crazy stuff, but
yeah.
Yeah, it smelled nice.
Paganry, and also you just have pilgrims who are sweaty. I'm serious.
Yeah, but they weren't like just like trying to Febreze the walls. It was like
there's rituals about them.
Yes.
So and all those different rites within the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, they all have things that they have to do every day. Maybe you learned about it while you were there. The status quo agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So like every day at 4:00, I think the Franciscans. It would have been so cool for you to see this, but they do. It's not a Stations of the Cross, but it's a similar sort of thing. It's like, it's a ritual that they've been doing for, like 600 years.
Hmm.
And they lead it every day at 4:00. And if they're, like, late or they don't do it, like, they forfeit the agreement.
Oh, wow.
Like, and this has been going on since, like, the 1830s, the status quo.
Incredible.
So, like, nothing in that church is allowed to change. One of the funny things about that, though, is that the Franciscans, now, I think this is in the 1980s, Franciscans, one day at a time, smuggled in a piece of an organ and started. I'm not even kidding. They smuggled in an organ one piece at a time, and then like assembled it basically overnight. And now there's an organ in there,
mm-hmm.
which all the other rites are so upset about. But because of the status quo agreement, they can't change anything. Now that the organ's there, they can't take it out.
Incredible. Leave it to the Roman rite.
Yeah. But within the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, like Alyssa was saying, you have the last two stations. Well, I guess more than that. Jesus is nailed to the cross would be one.
Yeah.
Jesus dies on the cross. Because Calvary is in there, and then also the tomb is in there.
Right.
Like they're maybe 50 yards from each other, and one is 30 feet higher than the other,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah. So that was the interesting part too, was you had to use a little bit of your imagination. And I think it'd be pretty tempting to go in there. Like for those who are sort of on the fence about their faith, I think it could probably go one of two ways, like completely overwhelmed by the reality of what's present there, or really like there's no way this took place here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't look like a mount of Calvary, like it's inside a church. There's very steep steps going up, and you can touch the rock where the Holy Cross was, and there's so many, you know, things to venerate there. But then, like Father said, like 50 yards away, much further down, is where the tomb is. And just them describing it, like it was said both ways. She was kind of like awesome. Like, why is she not spoken about more? But she comes in, you know, and is like, we're taking this and we're taking this and, you know, take away this mountain and Yeah, so there used to be a huge mountain where the tomb is. So you do have to imagine a little bit, like, no, he was in an actual, like, tomb, like, cave type, like, scenario. It's not just this little, like, mini church within a big church that you just walk into. But that was sort of the crazy thing, was that for those of you who have never been, you're, like, trying to just enter into the reality that you're, like, I'm going to touch the tomb of Jesus, and I... like, there's no way for me to process all of that right now. And you're waiting in this line that wraps around this little, like, it's not a baldacchino, but it sort of looks like...
almost like a mini chapel.
It's like a mini chapel, yeah. And you, like, four people go in at a time, and you go into this room. And then you wait for other people to come out. And those four people that were in the little small waiting chamber go into... they have to, like, duck really low down and go into... where his tomb is, and it's like maybe like a 7-foot room, like if that, 10-foot room, and you're on your knees, like there's really no way to stand in there, and then you get about 12 seconds before the guy at the door is like, come on. But that's not to say that the experience was cheapened at all. Like, it was not, there was a human element there where it's like, man, I want to, like, sleep here, you know? Like, I want to stay here all day, but the whole experience was part of it.
One of the hard things for you about describing this is, like, there's so much happening beneath the surface that, like, you're just, you can only describe the surface, but there's so much.
Oh, yeah.
And it is true, like, you had to be there. Yeah, no, you really did.
No,
you had,
literally.
You had to be there. And there is so much that will flow out of this pilgrimage for you and for many others, like, things you'll remember back to in years from now, and to say, like, oh my gosh, I didn't see how that connected before. And the Lord is, like, preserving memories to be able to bring things up for you in the future and for other people. So, like, storing up a bank of, like, just fodder for your own holiness and for others' holiness too. So,
yeah.
Just to, for you, as you process this experience of trusting, okay, wow, well, like, there was good that was accomplished there, but then there's still so much that,
right.
And I think that's one of the huge blessings of a pilgrimage is, yeah, obviously experiencing the places, hopefully growing in community with the people you're with, and then also, like, you have no idea what the Lord can do afterwards.
Right.
And isn't that the adventure of Christianity? Like, when we surrender our lives to the Lord, who knows where he's going to take us?
Yeah. No, that's it. Yeah. It's one of, I keep trying to think of, like, I wish there were, like, a small little package that I could, like, place everything in and say, these are the conclusions I've drawn, and this is, like, the present I was given. And that's not it at all. It's, like, just a deeper unveiling of who Jesus is, who God is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's so much more, but I don't know where you want to go with it. Or.
No, I think we can let the Lord decide, and we'll hear more about it in the future.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, because you got to unpack this stuff still.
I do.
That's good.
And discern, like, what's worth sharing and what's mine.
Totally.
Know? Yeah.
Totally.
But.
Thank you for being open and sharing so much already.
Sure.
Yeah. She's jet lagged and sneezing.
Ill. I thought I could stick it out, but my body was like, we are done with you.
We'll get you back to health. A shout out to all the folks you went with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good things are happening. I love it.
Yeah, praise God.
See you next time.
Okay, bye.